Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, and today this is a bonus episode for you guys out there. This was recorded at a local wholesale meetup, and that meetup is hosted by Jeff Rappaport and another investor by the name of Brian Pitcher. Brian Pitcher is a very successful investor himself, and he is a member of Collective Genius, which is the elite real estate mastermind group that you've maybe a lot of you've probably heard the name before. So anyway, this was another investor interviewing Jeff Rappaport on wholesaling, and it dives into his business, what he's doing. It gets into some creative financing deals that he's done, and some of his techniques there. So hope you guys enjoy this. Let us know what you think. Again, this was recorded live, and it was at a restaurant. So hope you guys don't mind the background noise, this was opened up to the audience to ask questions, and so some of those speakers you might not be able to hear, but the moderator was reiterating the questions that the guest was asking. So without further ado, I will let you guys hear that, but Quick announcement. We do have our creative financing hotline set up. This hotline is for you guys out there to call in, leave a voicemail. This will only go directly to voicemail. And it's for you guys to ask questions, to let us know what you guys are interested in hearing on this podcast, because we just want to bring relevant, valuable information that you guys want to hear. So, you know, you can leave us a comment if you would like, but it's more kind of set up for questions. So if you guys have questions about creative financing, using specific strategies, how to get started, whatever, or if you guys just want to, if you guys are working on a deal and you would like Jeff to kind of create some kind of creative financing offer for that deal or multiple offers, then what we need you to do is leave your name, what market you're in. We need to know what the ARV is of the property. We need to know what taxes and insurance are. We need to know what's owed on the property as far as mortgage, and if the payment for that mortgage is included or includes the taxes and insurance. We also need to know the general condition of the property, how much is needed to fix it up, and that kind of thing. So, yeah, give us a call. Here's the number, 877-409-8090. Again, that is 877-409-8090. That's our hotline. So we might even get your guys' voicemail on the show. Not sure yet. But please give us a call and let us know. Also, if you want to reach us online, we are at www.thecreativefinancingpodcast.com, just as it's spelled, www.thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. And without further ado, here you guys go. Enjoy.
It'll be a great learning experience for me tonight to be able to kind of pick Jeff's brain. He and I both emailed back and forth some questions and went over just a few of them. I did want to just read what was kind of advertised on the marketing for this, and I think all these things should be covered. So if you came for one specific thing tonight and it doesn't get covered, please shoot your hand up, be brave for that 20 seconds or whatever, ask the question so we can answer it. There was really only three things on there, like how to start from scratch, what is working now, and how to scale your business. So if any of those things caught your eye and you're like, hey, you guys didn't adequately cover that, please make sure to go ahead and chime in and ask your questions as we do that.
And can I add just, so when we came up with this, we literally came up with like, 50, I don't know, maybe 8-10 questions each.
Each, yeah.
So we had like 20, but we're like, we're good if we only get through four because all of you have a certain, you know, you have ideas of what you want to talk about. So it's really based on what you guys want. So
sure. So there'll be some nuances and some things in here that we might not cover. A lot of you guys that are experienced might know them, but if you're bored to death, just go take a smoke break. but we'll cover those on all levels. So Jeff, I wanted to start out by asking you, like, right now, what are some of the best strategies and techniques that are working right now that you're seeing, that you're finding?
So we're in a really competitive market, and we work in three markets. So we're in Utah, Idaho, and the state of Washington. And they're all similar, but they're all a little bit different. So we have a pretty decent perspective. Utah's probably the most competitive out of all three. Idaho, and then you would think Washington would be, but not in the areas that we're working in right now. So bonus for us. So I would tell you that there's a few different things that you'd want to look at to make sure that you're doing the right things. One is marketing. So if we're talking strictly about wholesaling, we got to get that phone to ring. So one of the things that's working better right now, so we still do direct mail, and our response rate is really low. So maybe in Utah, at minimum a 0.25%. So really low, right? I mean, that's kind of ridiculous. But we still get deals. It still makes sense. We get a better response rate in our other two markets. Actually, we get a way better response rate in Washington. But direct mail is still part of our marketing. But some of the things that are starting to happen all over the country is cold calling has come way back. So back from years and years ago, cold calling is working. You know, now you have like what's ringless voicemail. So where you just leave a voicemail on someone's cell phone or landline, and then they hopefully call you back if they're interested. Things that maybe not work, I mean, Jonathan is a big marketer in terms of bandit signs. They still work, but probably less response than what you would normally be used to. So you got to be more consistent. You got to do more of. I would tell you the thing that works the best for us is that we're able to offer multiple offers to most sellers. So we're not just going in at this lowball cash offer. So we're offering financing offers. And sometimes it's one, maybe two. Sometimes it's up to four different offers that they can choose from. We have really good success with that. And I would tell you that if you're not comfortable, and it can be as simple as, I'm going to make you a principal-only offer and an interest-only offer and a cash offer. It could be as simple as that. Ours are a little more in-depth, but it could literally be as simple as that. You're going to get more deals that way. I know most of you would think that based on the way that the market is right now, that why would anyone take creative financing? They do. They do it every day. One of the other things that's working right now that we're going to start doing more of is, as wholesalers, you're used to creating a buyer's list and putting your properties out to your buyer's list, which we would normally still do. But the best buyer's list right now is the MLS. So if you actually bought the property, you can now go put it on the MLS and sell it, and most likely you're going to get considerably more for it, even if it's not in ideal condition. So we had just gone to a mastermind in Florida, and I mean, this guy is doing, no joke, 50 to 80 properties a year and making so much money, bigger than anyone I've ever met real estate wise. And that's what he does on literally every deal that he gets. So They actually have lines of credit. They buy them, and they put them right back on the MLS, and they sell them. So those are some of the tips I would tell you to look at. You know, some of the other things that maybe might not be as conventional, and I think people have different ideas of how this would work. We do most of our deals over the phone. We don't run out and have appointments a whole lot. The appointments still work. They do. And that face-to-face is really a good thing. But it works both ways. So you have to determine what you're best at, what you're most comfortable at doing. We just find that it's not best for us to run out all over. And we're pretty spread out. So anyone want to touch on some other topic in terms of what's working now? And maybe I can address it. Or Brian, do you want to add anything to that? Yeah.
I mean, you probably met with people in person. How do you transition just over the phone and
talk about that? I'm sorry?
Can I repeat the question? So the question is you probably met with people, you talked to them over the phone. How do you transition to meet them in person?
No, well, you guys probably met with people in person before, right? You even had less people to deal with. So now you do most of your stuff over the phone.
Right.
How did you transition? I haven't done that many deals but I don't feel like someone feel comfortable closing them over the phone.
So the question is like, hey, you used to meet with people in person, correct, before you started to scale your business. Now you're doing most of it on the phone. And then he wants that addressed.
So first of all, and you know, Brian, we can probably have talk because I know that Brian does go on more appointments and we don't. So as far as what we do, since we work in other markets, we're never meeting them. I mean, we've never met the sellers unless the buyers are from here and we know them that, you know, we're never going to meet the buyer either. So really what we do is what our goal is we talk to them on the phone. We pre-screen them. We do our research. And what we want to do right now is talk to someone at noon, do our research, have them an offer by 5 o'clock that day. Follow up, go through the offer, see which one they like, try to put it under contract, try to close. So literally within a 24-hour or less period of time. That is not where we're at right now. That is not happening, but that is what we are working toward. Brian, you want to talk about appointments?
I used to screen people a lot harder and would really only go on the appointment if I knew I was going to get it before I went. And I like to go to the properties because I'm rehabbing most of the time. And so I want to know what kind of work I got to deal with when I'm there. And then I usually don't see the house again after that. So, you know, that's what I was doing. But I've decided lately if instead of a 90% chance of getting it, if I got a 50-50 or greater, based on I think they're motivated or their situation says that they should be motivated. I'm going on a bunch of appointments that I wouldn't have gone on before because I still believe I'll get 2 out of 10 of those appointments. So that's one of the things I'm doing.
Anyone else? Right. Wanna
any other areas that you're interested in?
Oh, come on.
Yeah, touch a little bit on, you were talking about fan side marketing, obviously cold calling, but
sure.
So the question is to elaborating on online marketing.
So online marketing is obviously where things are moving toward. You know, it's almost like you have two groups of sellers right now. You have the older, which is really what, for the most part, wholesalers deal with. It's people that have owned these houses, you know, may have them free and clear. They have a bunch of equity. They've owned them for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. They've just not done a whole lot of maintenance, and you know, now it needs to be updated. So that's one. They still respond to phone calls, direct mail, all the older style type marketing. The younger people respond more to the online marketing. And so that's exactly where the marketing is going to go. So we do some PPC. We're fairly new to that game. We've been doing it for 3-4 weeks now, which is all. So we're still trying to to figure it out the way that it would work best for us. Facebook's another great one. SEO, which would be search engine optimization. More work than money spent, but PPC also expensive. Yeah, PPC can get very expensive. And you should understand something. All your online leads, almost all your online leads, will be extremely competitive. Because if you think about it, someone's gone online, searched, like, I got to do something about my house, and they've clicked on this, and they clicked on this, and now they've sent 10 responses out. They're waiting for 10 responses back. I would tell you, just in general, 5 or 6 or 7 out of those 10 won't get back to them maybe at all, and certainly not in a timely manner, but several will. I mean, we had a PPC lead last week. We called them that night. Someone had already been to the house by them. So very competitive. You better, if you're going to be...
the time you got it to call?
Hours. So, and it really should be minutes. Yes. Yeah. And if you're not capable of doing that, you probably, you don't want to be doing PPC because you're literally every lead could cost you $100 to $200 or more just for a click. So, yeah.
It's insane. I just watch the dollar signs every week.
Yeah, correct.
What other technologies are you exploring?
What other technology are we exploring? So I am the least technological person you will ever meet. I need people to help me all the time. So I try to surround myself with people that understand it. So we will be a player in the PPC market. We will be a player in the Facebook market, and we'll be probably a player in the SEO market. And as far as other technology, I mean, and we'll talk about this more later, but in developing our processes, our systems. I mean, there's so much technology out there now. This mastermind that we went to, seriously, all they do is they have a person that handles every single aspect. It's a conveyor belt. And someone literally looks up comps, they put it into their little calculator, it spits out an LOI, it sends it to them. They say yes, they hit a couple buttons, and there's a purchase agreement all signed, ready. They can even see when they've opened it, how long they've spent on each page, and they know exactly who to follow up with as quickly as possible. Their whole business is all about numbers. It's just big, big numbers. So I don't know if we want quite that, but we want to some degree that. So a lot, but it won't be me. I promise you that. I need to step away. I need to get out of the way of it. So I still do things old school, and it's not very efficient. I'll tell you that right now. You'd be surprised. Yellow pads, post-it notes, they're my friends.
That's our challenge. Just PM to a paperless.
What about negotiations? What are your best negotiation tools? When you're talking to them, or...
So he asked what are our best negotiation tools. So the first thing I would tell you is that there is a ton. I mean, a tremendous amount of information about sales and negotiations. And a lot of it's free, either through Audible, YouTube, Google. So that's something that you should always be looking at. I would tell you there's two people I really like. And they're both in the real estate business. So John Martinez would be one in terms of sales. And you'll learn some different techniques that are...
Just don't do
Sellers Neighbors. Well, yeah. You're right. No, let's not say that. It's been recorded. But his sales course is top-notch. And the best real estate investors in the country have used him and currently use him. I mean, I think you sent, like...
I sent a couple people.
You brought like team, right? Yeah. to his training.
He's amazing.
He's really good, and it's actually semi affordable. It's not like over the top kind of expensive. So And you can do it online. You can go in person. So that's a good resource. Sean Terry is another good one. He has like a 9-sequence conversion course or something like that. It might even be free. You might just have to Google him and search around, and you'll find bits and pieces of it for sure. And then there's a million books. And I would tell you that you've got to, it depends how far you want to take this. I mean, it can be literally from trying to determine personality types, like within 2 minutes of meeting someone, to how you're going to relate to them, to developing rapport. I've never really had a whole problem in terms of sales because I have a social work background. So I'm good at diagnosing problems, figuring out pain points, figuring out people. So I've just been able to kind of incorporate that for myself. But as far as like my team, Josh, who's not here, my partner, he's awesome. I mean, he is an excellent sales guy. And really the reason that he is because he can connect with anyone. So old, young, whatever, it doesn't matter.
So I'll add in a little bit on the sales side of things. A lot of people are focused when they go and they say, I need to learn how to sell. They're trying to learn all these different closing techniques and everything. And although that stuff does work, it's not the priority. It's not the most important part of the sales process. The most important part of the sales process is the interview process of diving in and finding out what their real problem is. And if you offer a solution to the problem, that's called a sale. And so you want to really find out what their true problem is. And unfortunately, they lie to you. Everybody lies to you the first time you ask. I mean, even if you
ask those walls.
It's the walls. Even if you say, hey, how's your day today? Oh, it's been great. When in reality, it's been the worst day ever, but they lied to you. Oh, really? What was great about it? Oh, it wasn't really that great. So, really, just find out. You got to dive in, ask lots of questions, and find out what their real issues are, and then figure out a solution to it. And then that's how you put deals together.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
That was good. Good.
I guess follow up would be, what are the most common pains that you see as far as like finding their solution?
Pain could be as simple as, I've got to get my son out of jail. I got to bail him out, and I don't have the $5,000 that it's going to require to do it. So I got to figure out a way to get $5,000. It could be that, you know, and it's funny, you wouldn't think this, but I come across it all the time, we do, is that people that have free and clear properties still have pain for whatever reason. You wouldn't think that it's financial. It's not really costing them a whole lot of money, right? Taxes, maybe some insurance, but they can still have motivation and they still can have pain. And it's typically what they associate with that property. So it might have been mom and dad's property and mom and dad passed away. Or mom and dad are now in some kind of home and this house has an emotional attachment and that emotional attachment's not good for them anymore. Or it could be financial. Or it could be it's too big. Or I'm making 2 mortgage payments and I can't afford it. Or I had a bad experience with a tenant. Or it could be 50 other things. What you have to do is ask the right questions. And the questions aren't, so tell me, what's the problem? It's not really that direct. What you want to do is get to know the person, ask some questions where you can kind of get to that place where they open up to you and they tell you, look, this property is just, it's meant too much to me. I have these feelings and, you know, mom died here or, whatever. And that's the way that you want to go about it rather than be like, okay, just tell me what the problem is. I'll give you a solution.
Yeah, I think that's a good
Anybody else have anything along those lines?
Have you guys approached wholesaling from looking at them at their asking price and what you can do with that?
Repeat that question so everybody can hear it.
So what the question was is, do you go about wholesaling by dealing with their asking price and then working your way down? So for us, and everyone is going to be different. It's going to be based on your business model. And our business model is not everyone has to fit into a certain shape, okay? If you are a traditional wholesaler, you need to be talking to people that have a bunch of equity that most likely need some work to their property, and they're willing to take a pretty sizable discount. We don't look at that. So that doesn't matter to us, because we can create some terms and we can buy big, beautiful houses for market value even more than what they would like. So no, we don't go there. What we're going to do is we're going to make them multiple offers, and one is going to be like, hey, if you're asking $400,000 for your property, one's going to be $400,000 or above. One's going to be probably just below with some different terms. One's probably going to be below that. And then our cash price all the way down there. And if they want that, it doesn't matter which offer they take. They will all work for us. So we might do something different with the property depending on what offer they take. But the goal is to get deals and get them accepted rather than we may only need to talk to 10 people before we can actually convert a deal. A normal wholesaler may have to talk to 20, 25, 30 before they can get a deal.
What's the benefit of getting an offer on market price? What do you do with a
home? Good question. Great question.
So what's the benefit of giving someone market value for their home?
Yeah.
Well, they like it. How do we make any money? That's a 3-day seminar right there.
Jeff, can I interrupt?
Yeah, sure, please.
Let me see if we can address that. So would it be helpful? You've recently put a deal together similar to this, correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Would it be helpful if maybe he walked through some of the basic steps of that deal? Now, we probably won't be able to, again, we don't have 3 days, but that might help. Any objections to that?
I mean, be brave and object.
Which one are you going to talk about?
Hebrew.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, so Jeff, would you start to go into details, maybe how you found it real quick, and then basically general offers made, what they accepted. Let's go to that point and then go how you're going to make money off of that.
Got it. So first of all, the reason that we like to use creative finance is that, one, we can pay more than you can pay every single time, no matter what. So if you had a $300,000 home and it was in really good shape and you could go put it on the MLS and get $300,000, I can offer you $320,000. I can offer you $500,000. I can offer you whatever you want, almost, depending on what the underlying debt structure is. If it's free and clear, I can offer you almost any price that you want. But the rest has to be based on the terms that we want. So price becomes least important. That's what you should understand first and foremost. Okay. So we had a property. We did some direct mail. We got a lead up in Heber, and I thought this house was worth about $315,000 to $325,000. But I got to tell you, there's not a lot of comps in Heber, and the tax records are really weak. So we're guessing sort of on square footage, and on the tax records it's showing one level, but there's a basement, and the basement's really funky, like it's sort of finished, but not. And there's like all these cold storage, but they're like closets, and it's weird, okay? Really odd. And the upstairs is all right. When I saw the pictures and the video, I thought, wow, this is a piece of crap. But apparently it's a little better than what I had thought. And so we made several offers, including a cash offer. And I can't remember what she was asking. I think she wanted, in her mind, she wanted like 285, I think. She thought that it was like 285 was market value. And she was renting it for $12.50 a month. And it had not been updated at all for, I don't know, this was built in the 1920s. It might not have been updated for 1920.
Yeah, 1925.
So what we did is we structured several different offers to her, and one was at 275, which this is prior to me seeing it, so I was basing these offers on what information we got from her, which she said, hey, the property's in good shape, and I'm like, wow, it's got this basement too, and you know, it's probably worth this much. So I made her an offer of $275, and I think the payment was, we've gone back and forth like five times on this deal.
Yes.
The payment, so her mortgage payment is like $1,000 PITI, so everything, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. So she wasn't making a lot of money from this rental. Maybe I don't remember if she was paying water, sewer, or garbage or not, but $200 maybe a month, what she was making. And she had quite a bit of equity. I think she owes about $150,000. And so I made her an offer of $275 with, oh man, how much did we offer her down? $16,000. Okay. $16,000 down, and her payment would be $1,250 principal and interest. So taxes and insurance would still be added. So it would be like $1,480, I think, was the total for everything. I think it was going to be like $1,450.
It was $1,450.
But she was going to, all of a sudden now she's making more money, cash flow wise, than she was as a rental. She was getting some money up front, and then there was like a 3-year balloon, and she was going to get paid out the rest. Now, the difference with this particular is that this offer is that the interest rate was low, like really low.
3%.
Like 3%. And so the principal paid down quite a bit quickly. So at the end of like 3 years, I think the balloon payment was like $233,000. So that's an offer I like to make. Because I can give people a good price and I can do it a short term, like 3 years.
But let me interrupt. You made more than this offer. You offered, did you offer anything else?
I did offer.
Cash offer in there?
Yeah.
What was the cash offer you made her?
$230 maybe. Mm-hmm. It might have been less than that.
And did you make a total of like 3 or 4 offers?
I made like 3 offers.
Okay, like 3 offers. So a cash offer, this one, and then another one.
Yeah. This is the one she chose, which is the one with what? The highest price. I mean, that's typically what people like to do. So I then saw the pictures and I'm like, I don't know if we can buy this because I don't know that it's really even worth $275. So we went back to her, and this is, we would have done this anyway because we're wholesalers and we don't normally buy them unless they're a super good deal for us. Then we went back and said, look, we have one of 3 choices. We can terminate our contract because it has more in repairs than we were anticipating. 2, we can renegotiate the deal. Or 3, we can leave everything the same and give us 30 days. Let me see what we can do as far as our network of buyers goes. And maybe we get you these terms. She's like, 30 days, let's go. So
24 hours.
Yeah, we did some marketing and we had like 100 calls. And we showed it to, I don't know, 6, 7 people all at once. Fiasco. Total fiasco.
Yes.
We lots put a couple of ads and some signs, really. That's all. That's all. And so this is what ended up happening. So we got a cash offer for full price, which was I was hopeful that we'd make $14,000. Okay. So I was upping, I think the purchase price was like $276, actually. So we were marketing it for $290. I was hoping, you know, we could get really lucky and make $14,000. So we got a cash offer for $290. We got owner financing offer, and it started out exactly what we wanted, but it was a realtor that brought the deal. So his buyer was going to bring $40,000 down payment. So $40,000 meant that the realtor wanted to get paid, we needed to get paid, and the down payment to the seller needed to get done. So we were short $1,700, and I told the realtor, I think you should take $1,700 less. And he thought we should take $1,700 less. And we were at a standstill for a little bit over $1,700, which is ridiculous. So he then said, what if we come with an additional $20,000 in 4 months? Well, I knew my seller wanted cash, and I said, I don't think that'll be much of an issue. And so, but I said, I'm not going back to renegotiate with my seller unless I know your buyer's committed, because I don't want to start planting seeds in her mind that you're going to get this if he's not going to perform. Because I'm not going to come up with another buyer that's going to put down 30 and then another 20 in 4 months. So he's like, yep, he's in. So I went and did it. And she's like, yeah, she was jumping for joy. It was no problem. And when I renegotiated, I said, we have to drop the purchase price by $2,000. So remember, we were $1,700 short. I was creating that $1,700. And so, hold on. We actually get another like five. So it's now good. Now everyone's agreed. And then the realtor says, so we got to do a home inspection. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, we got to get that done. I'm like, the tenant was not happy. Yeah, apparently he's been there for a while, didn't know that she was selling. I just had six or seven people walk through there. I would say that he's kind of racist. He had some stuff up in his place that wasn't not very politically correct. Now, he was very angry, and I'm like, well, what do you mean, an inspection? Your guy's gone through there, and now I asked you for a commitment, and he's like, oh, we just got to do it. And I was irate, and we worked it out. We got him through there. It was the strangest inspection. It was like a friend of his. Maybe he's in construction or something. And he walked through for like 20 minutes. He's like, we're good. I'm like, all right. So then we've already negotiated, right? It's done. Now, what if we come with $80,000 down and we want another year? And we want this and that and whatever. I'm like, I'm getting tired of this. So we went back to him and we said, yeah, we're going to raise the price by $5,000. And he's like, oh, no way. And I'm like, okay, back to the original deal. And he's like, well, and I showed him by getting an extra year and paying $5,000 more, that it actually benefited him. He was actually getting like $12,000 for that $5,000.
Yeah. So, meaning it benefited his buyer.
Yes.
Not him so much.
I have never talked to the buyer. I don't even know who the buyer is.
It benefits the buyer.
So we now agreed. So here's what it turned out to be. We sold the property, or about to. We'll sell it on Monday for $302,000 with $80,000 down. At 3% interest now for 4 years. I think the balloon payment is like 190 something now. And now we make 20,000 instead of 14. So on a house that I really didn't know, a house I really didn't think we were even going to be able to sell. So
seller financing is key.
So they're buying on seller financing, right, Jeff? And you're selling on seller financing. Is that right?
We didn't actually buy it. We were wholesaling this one. But, yes, you could do either one. So you could wholesale it, or you could literally buy it and stay in the middle and sell it there wasn't a lot of room on this one, so
Contract for deed.
Oh, it was a contract for deed.
Yeah, question is just what's the paperwork they use? They use a contract for deed. All right.
All right, guys, that was the end of that. I apologize that it was kind of cut short. There was the meeting went on, but my computer died at that point. I was recording, and I wasn't next to an outlet, so I couldn't plug my computer in based on where I had to position the mic where these guys were sitting. So I apologize about that, but hope you enjoyed it anyway. It kind of dives into Jeff's business and what he's doing today in this market. So we need your help with ratings and reviews, guys, for us to continue to bring you content that's valuable and relevant to you. We need you guys to get on iTunes right now and rate this podcast. The more ratings we get, the more people we get in front of, and the more episodes we're going to do for you folks. So please, 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 please rate and review this. We appreciate your attention. We value your attention, and we're just so glad that you listen to this. So until next time, guys, take care and create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.